Welcome to today's and this year's final keynote at Linux Tech 2012. The Linux desktop is in a special situation. We've been talking about the Linux desktop for a couple of years as a very emerging and still again emerging subject. But quite recently, we've seen some rather more fundamental changes in paradigm, especially if you look at smartphones, at tablets. The user experience is rapidly changing. And to accommodate such a shift of paradigms, it's necessary to have a solid foundation. And one of the major solid foundations you can pick from in the Linux and open source ecosystem is certainly the Qt and KDE environment. And so I'm very pleased that we have a joint keynote of both Cornelius Schumacher of KDE, also engaged at the OpenSUSE team, as well as Lars Knoll, founder, inventor, and today chief maintainer of the Qt project at Nokia, delivering a joint outlook to new user interfaces and approaches to the desktop. Please give a big hand to Lars and Cornelius.
Well, thank you and welcome everybody. So yeah, I mean, I'd say I need to correct it a little bit. I'm not the founder who created Qt in the first place. I started working on it a little bit later than that, but we'll come to that. So what we're going to talk about today is a little bit about Qt 5, the next upcoming big version of Qt. That we've been working on now since about 1 year. What it brings, what kind of changes it brings, how this integrates, you know, especially on Linux with the KDE platform, these kind of things. And let's go through this and see how, you know, what really changes and why things have changed quite a bit over the last years. So let me get a little bit back. Qt is a development framework. It's there, you know, to make application development easy. We had a vision always that it's actually basically two parts. One is the tagline that we're using everywhere, this code once, create more, deploy everywhere, which means, you know, we want to be cross-platform. We want Qt to work on all sorts of operating systems and, you know, on different types of hardware from, you know, embedded devices all the way up to, you know, desktops and big systems like, you know, flight control systems or something like that, which has actually been used for that. And the internal thing that we always had was we wanted to provide really the best tools and frameworks for application developers that we could come up with. We are ourselves, you know, developers. We want to develop applications, frameworks, and we really wanted to get the best tools for that in place. To look a little bit back, the history, you know, Qt actually came up and was done by a small Norwegian company, you know, called Trolltech, which doesn't exist these days anymore. But, you know, that was founded in 1994, and the Qt version 1.0 was released in 96. It was a pure C++ UI toolkit, had the standard stuff that you need, you know, some tools classes, and, you know, you could create buttons and menu bars with it. It wasn't very advanced, but it was a great thing compared to everything else that was out there at that point in time. 1998, KDE then releases version 1.0 of its Linux desktop based on Qt. And then, you know, we had a few more things. We had a few more versions of Qt, and we actually also some changes in the licensing. If you look back, the version Qt 1.0 was released. The source code for Linux was released and X11, but it was still under, at least certainly not an open source compatible license. And the licensing then changed gradually over the years. We opened up more and more until Qt 4 came out in 2005, where all versions of Qt were released under the GPL. And then KDE 3.5 came out on top of that. No, not, not yet. 2008, then Nokia acquired Toltec. And we started working for Nokia on many, many things. And also, you know, there was a big additional investment happening into Q24. We were a company, you know, we had probably around 30 developers. With Nokia, this grew significantly. 2011, then, last year, we had the Nokia N9 released, completely Qt-based phone, using Qt 4.7. And also in 2011, then, we moved over to an open governance model. In between, in, I think in 2009, we moved Qt over and made it LGPL. And with open governance, we then took the next logical step, and that was, you know, from, you know, gradually opening up and making the licenses more liberal, then to moving over and actually really involving the community more in the development process. Before, you know, most of Qt was developed in-house. The community, you know, came up with some patches sometimes here and there, a lot of bug reports. It was a great help, and it helped ensure the quality of Qt. But what we're doing now is really we moved it out, and it's a real open source project. And we'll come to the details of that a little bit later. Cornelius will be talking about that. A little bit of my history. I've been working with Qt for around 14 years now. I looked at it, and it's been a long time, actually. So I started off, and actually I got interested in it the first time through an article in the CT at that point in time about Qt in 1997, I think it was, in the KDE. Started working for KDE. I did KHTML, started that project, which is now WebKit. Then joined Toltec in 2000 as a developer and was leading the development environment there from 2007 to 2011. And now working as the chief maintainer for Qt since then.
Okay, and for my introduction, my name is Cornelius Schumacher. This is my first Qt application. I wrote it in 1998, I think, when I was still working in high energy physics, so this is a data acquisition, hardware controlled software to read data from the then development version of some electronics for Atlas, one of the LHC experiments. And I was working that, I think it was Qt 1.4 or something. Yeah, and I got hooked and it never let me go again. So shortly afterwards, I also got introduced into the KDE community, started to love working on Qt and worked on KDE, wrote a lot of code there, and my current role in KDE is being the president of KDE EV, which is the organization, the foundation behind the KDE community. Yeah, my day job is working for SUSE as an engineering manager, and that's more or less about me.
Yeah. So then, as a small thing, I wanted to give, let's see, I mean, how many of you do you know Qt as a framework? Let's see a short raise of hands that will tell me how fast I can go through things. Okay, half. So then I'll give you a short overview over what Qt is and what we have there, and then show you where we're moving with it in the future. So Qt consists basically of several parts. The first one is the frameworks. It's a set of shared libraries, APIs, C++ based, and they contain everything you need to create your application. So low-level container classes, graphical elements, OpenGL integration, you name it, whatever you can, most of the things you really need when you want to create an application. And it's cross-platform, has been that from the very beginning. So we have also versions, you know, for Mac and Windows, and actually some embedded platforms. We'll come to that later. Then we have Qt Quick as a second, you know, pillar that has a new technology that has come up over the last couple of years, which is a declarative language to build your user interfaces. And it's there, you know, the main first focus was for us on the embedded, on the mobile space, to create fluid user interfaces, you know, things, you know, where you can really keep the 60 frames per second refresh rate, move things around, do touch-based manipulation of the user interface. But we're also seeing that this becomes more and more interesting also to move, bring that back to the classical desktop over time. The next thing we have, the next pillar, is actually Qt Creator. It's our IDE, and here's a screenshot of it. It's completely written in Qt itself, which means the source code is the same, you know, whether you run this on Windows, Linux, or Mac. It provides everything you need from a modern IDE, code completion, refactoring tools, support for different languages. And as the last piece, we have what we call the SDK, which brings all of these together into an easy install and integrated package. On Linux, you often don't use that in SDK because you just use what the Linux distributions provide you. All of them packaged, queued up, and you can just go and, you know, whatever your preferred method is, install the packages, whether it's apt-get or yum or anything else. So the SDK is mainly there if you want to have a standalone package of Qt, install that. And it's available for Linux, Windows, and Mac. And you can target with it, you can target the desktop platforms and some embedded and mobile platforms. So that's what we have, and that's the, in the end, the product. But Qt came, as you saw from the history, from the 1990s. We started off there. If you look at the user interfaces back at that time, also all the way up to 2005, approximately, they were based on, you know, widgets, relatively static user interfaces. Not as much was happening. You clicked on a button, a pop-up came up, you could do something there, you closed it again. Even things like, you know, for the longest time, even things like smoothly scrolling was not there. It came then around 2005, that's when things started changing. And what we're nowadays seeing is that the space, you know, that we're working in has, you know, significantly changed. Before, it was mainly desktop PCs, you know, and whether you used, you know, Linux with a KDE desktop, you used Windows, or you used a Mac, it was relatively similar in terms of user interfaces. And what we could do there is we abstracted the thing in a platform-independent way and made the application look native, with the same source code on all platforms. Now, with what happened now in the mobile space, this became much more difficult and challenging. The user interfaces are completely different. They're fluid, touch-based. We have a lot of different form factors. It's not just the screen, which is usually big enough to contain your application, but sometimes you have rather small screens, restricted space. And this leads to a very large and diverse user base that we now have with Qt. I mean, it's being used for creating, you know, small user interfaces for a coffee machine, all the way up to, as I already mentioned, flight control systems. So if you fly over Germany, you know, the flight control system for the German airspace is Qt-based. So the range of applications you have ranges from very simple ones, like a simple, you know, small calculator, a small game, to very complex ones, large-scale applications, CAD applications, imaging applications, very simple ones. And it's, you know, from easy to rather powerful applications, so very easy for the end user to use, things like touch-based on a mobile phone, to very powerful high-end applications where, you know, it takes a lot of time to learn how to use the application. And all of that, you know, you want to cover with one toolkit. So that's the challenge we had. And as I said, I mean, since 2005, the world changed a lot. Some of the things that happened there is, you know, the mobile space, so tablets and mobile phones being used a lot more for computing. The other thing that changed is on the hardware side. If since you wanted to have fluid user interfaces, you can't do with software rasterization anymore. You need hardware acceleration. And OpenGL is now being used throughout. Actually, OpenGL is now on most also smaller chipsets, you get a decent OpenGL support. So how do we adjust to that world? And that's how we came up with Qt 5. Qt 4 was released in 2005, and it's been now 7 years. And as I said, during these 7 years, all these changes have happened. It was about time to now start thinking about how can we now bring Qt forward and adopt these changes to that changed world. And that's what we did. And I outlined, that was from a blog post I wrote 1 year ago, approximately. I outlined the vision that Qt 5 also should be the foundation for a new way of developing applications. And while we offer all the power of native Qt using C++, the focus also should shift to a model and where C++ is used to implement the backend functionality for Qt Quick. Qt Quick, as I said, is that declarative language for doing the user interfaces. Still, that means Qt Quick can be a very thin layer. Also, you know, and I'll say that now, probably also later again, I'll repeat it. This doesn't mean the old model that has been used for many years is going away. This is an addition to what, in addition to what we have. But we're seeing that for the future, this is what is going to be required more and more. And that's why we need to invest in that area and work in that area a bit more. So the goals that we set up with Qt 5. It should work for the whole ecosystem. As I said before, it's large. It goes from very small embedded low-end devices, you know, a couple of 100 megahertz ARM CPUs with little RAM, to, you know, the real high-end workstations. We want to have state-of-the-art user interfaces and allow for that. As I said, fluid, animated, you know, smooth 60 frames per second animations. We saw that also Qt has grown significantly over the years. We added more and more and more functionality. And to be able to maintain that better in the future and actually allow others to basically better integrate with Qt, we'll come to that one too. When we talk about the KDE side of things, we wanted to modularize it and, you know, split it up into smaller packages and allow others to integrate more easily. Another thing, since we're also talking about low-end devices for many things, we reduce the footprint of Qt, both, you know, RAM, ROM-wise, but also, you know, in terms of CPU usage. Make sure it performs as good as possible. And then the last goal was make it compatible with the existing Qt 4 that's being used, you know, all over the place by hundreds of thousands of developers, many, many applications. Just if you look at the Linux space, I mean, so many applications are built with Qt 4. We wanted to make it very easy for them to move over to Qt 5. We had something where we moved from Qt 3 to Qt 4, and that was a painful step for many people because we changed many fundamentals and many things in a rather source-incompatible way, and we don't want to repeat this time. That was the goals. But then we're doing some changes here to the structure. As I said, the modularization is giving us that. Before, we had in Qt 4, we had the main package, and then we had something which was called Qt Mobility, which was basically some interfaces mainly targeted at mobile platforms, but we had things under there which were just as useful for the desktop. So we restructured that a little bit, and now we say, you know, we're working on, you know, Qt is built on different platforms. We've picked four ones as our reference platforms. That's Linux with Wayland. The reason for that one is basically that's what we see is coming in the future. There's a lot of push now towards, you know, moving from X11 over to Wayland. It's also the solution that scales a lot better for embedded systems. Then Linux with X11, Windows and Mac OS X. And then, you know, we want to open up the possibilities for, you know, any other platforms that people want to integrate there. On top of that, we have what we call the Qt Essentials. That's a set of modules, I'll come to the list in a second, which we believe are useful everywhere for all types of applications, and which we also consider, you know, if you want to have a full port of Qt to a certain operating system, certain platform, this is the set that you really should have. Then, in addition, we have, as you see on the top right, what we call Qt add-ons. These are more modules that are, you know, more targeted towards a specific use case, or they might not work on all platforms. They're, you know, basically for X11 only, or only for Windows, or whatever you choose. And we wanted to enable and allow for a pretty big ecosystem to start creating itself around this area. Then we have the tools, Qt Creator, and a few other ones, and all of that we want to bundle up in an SDK. So that's the goal we have with Qt 5. The essentials, for those of you who know Qt a little bit, we have Qt Core, contains all the low-level enablers, tooling, classes, threading, file I/O, object model, you name it. Networking, some SQL support, Qt GUI, which is different for those of you who know Qt 4 from what it was in Qt 4. In Qt 4, it contained all the graphical things. In Qt 5, Qt GUI is basically containing all the graphical enablers, painting, you know, surface management, OpenGL integration, software rasterization, font support, text layouting, these kind of things, image loading, but not the widgets. We'll come to that in a second. We have the QML module, which is the engine that drives the Qt Quick declarative language. A Qt Quick module, the graphical elements on top. Qt3D, I'll come to that one later on. Location and multimedia and WebKit. I'll come to these in a bit later. And all of these work on the four reference platforms, Linux with Wayland and X, Windows and Mac. And then, as you see, I'll just show that one here. It's a large list of add-on modules. The one thing I want to mention here is Qt widgets. That's the other half of what used to be Qt GUI in Qt 4 and what's used, you know, for many of the desktop applications these days, or most of them. They are add-ons because we don't think they're required on many mobile devices, and you don't necessarily need them there. But for the desktop, they're basically required. And they provide the basic of what allows you to easily bring your Qt 4 application to Qt 5. So they're extremely important. And we want to keep them. And, you know, ideally, we're not investing too much in, you know, right now to add much new functionality there. But they're being maintained, and we'll continue having them for the lifetime of Qt 5. There's a few modules which we deprecated. You'll see them on the top bottom right part. OpenGL is just there because we have new functionality in Qt GUI that replaces it, which is mostly compatible with this one. So that's what we have. A little bit what we did on the graphics stack and where we changed the architecture. So we completely changed our graphics stack. That was one of the big architectural changes in Qt 5. Qt 4, we built on top of the windowing system, and then, you know, we used the native drawing things. We used XRender and XLib for drawing on X11. In Qt 5, we now changed it, and we support two rendering paradigms, the software rasterization, which is used by Qt Painter, and the imperative drawing that we used to have in Qt 4. And it's used by Qt Widgets. And on top of, and then, in addition, we have something where we directly go to OpenGL. And that's used by Qt Quick, the second version. Reason is that we've been working with Qt Painter, which is an imperative drawing API. It's like vector drawing graphics for many, many years. But we really reached the limits of how much we can optimize it nowadays. It's been optimized, but imperative drawing, you know, drawing vector graphics is not how GPUs work these days. So there's a limit of what you can do there. So for Qt Quick 2, we went over and created a new graphic stack directly on top of OpenGL with a scene graph, working exactly like the graphics hardware expects it to work. And we see that this gives us really great performance advantages. So if you look at the thing, QML1, that's Qt 4, we get 90 frames per second with software, 100 with OpenGL. There's not a huge difference. It's actually, you know, not helping that much to use hardware acceleration there, except that you offload the CPU and have it free for other things. And then we checked what can we do with software, with the software GL rasterization. LLVM stands for the Mesa LLVM pipe software rasterizer, which rasterizes OpenGL on the CPU and can do that multi-threaded, actually, so use multiple cores. And then we checked that against, you know, what we had in QML2 and Qt 5, where we see that already, you know, with software rasterization, single-threaded, using one core only, we get the same performance as we got in QML1 with hardware-accelerated OpenGL. And if we go to hardware-accelerated, we're 2.5 times faster now. And these numbers are from 1 year ago, so they would look quite a bit better, but I just didn't have time to create the new numbers for that these days. But it shows us that we can really, you know, improve. And since we have multiple cores on most desktops nowadays, even if you don't have a, you know, hardware-accelerated GL library with a software use case, we can get better performance. As I said, Qt Quick, a technology for fluid animated user interfaces. And in Qt 5, it's based on top of an OpenGL scene graph. That's really what we have there. We have a declarative QML language that describes the user interface. I'll show you that in a second. It's rather easy to integrate with C++. So in C++, we have the Qt object model with Q objects, signals, slots, and properties. And these ones you can directly expose to the QML language with very little code and very easily. In addition, we also provide JavaScript for application logic, you know, and you can choose yourself how much you want to use that. You can do very little in JavaScript or nothing, or you can do, I've seen whole applications being done that way, just with QML and JavaScript, without native code, without C++ code. The choice is yours, and that's I think, you know, is always good for development. So I'll give you a short demo of that. Let me just switch over here to an operating system that I can develop in. And I'll show you here. This is the photo viewer. I hope the network's working. It's a small thing, a small QML application. See how the things are animated. By the way, all of this is right now using the software rasterization inside a virtual machine. So, and you see it's still very smooth and nicely animated. And, you know, I could add something, ask for photos from Flickr. So this is a Flickr demo, basically. Downloads the photos from Flickr. I could ask for Berlin here. And hopefully it'll give us some nice pictures of Berlin. Or at least some of them. Another small application that I can show you, and I'll show you a little bit of source code here as well, is the clocks application. So this is a world clock, basically. And it's actually very little code. You can check in a second how much it is. But you see the different clocks with the different time zones. You can move to and see more of them here. And you see also what you see. If you look closely, you see how the seconds are nicely animated. And they tick really and a little bit back. So they have a slight, you know, overshoot, and then they move back. And it's smoothly animated. And this is something that you can very easily do with QML. And it's extremely hard to do in C++, I can tell you that. So, looking a little bit at the source code. So, this is how QML and Qt-Quick looks like. Can you... probably I should make it a little bit bigger. Does it work? Where is it? Ooh. Hey, where's my increased font size? This is, by the way, the Qt creator you see here is running against Qt 5, so there's still some smaller things in there. That's probably also why the changing of the font size didn't work. Can you see that? Tools, options. Oh. Wasn't there some shortcut just to do it? Yep. And fonts and colors. Let's make this one here. 16. Ooh, that's a bit too big. So this is okay. I hope this is readable. So what the root element we have here is a rectangle. That was just the thing you saw on screen. In there, we just put a list view, which contains a list model here. And you see the model is just done inline with a few city names and a time shift for the cities. It's very simple. In addition, we have a delegate, which tells how to render each element of the model. And the delegate we call clock. And that's what it is. In addition, it just has two buttons here on the, or two images that act as a, show you whether you can go left and right at the bottom. And that's it. And then you can go and we can have a look at the clock. Oop, let's go up to the thing. And the clock is just an item. You see there's something to adjust the width and the height dynamically. So it does that. And one of the interesting things about QML is that all of these things where you see a column here, they're bindings. They're not assignments, but they're bindings, which means whenever something on the right-hand side, and I'll show you that a little bit here down below, changes, the left-hand side gets updated automatically by the engine. So we have we define a few properties here for the clock, hours, minutes, seconds. And then we have, you know, a timer, which triggers every 100 milliseconds or something like that. That's quite odd. No. Quite often, actually, but well, and it calls the time, and on triggered, the time changed method gets called, which updates the properties here, the hours, minutes, and seconds properties of this element. And then we have an item here, for example, this one, which is the hour. So you see the source is an image, it's hours.png. It's smooth, says it's, you know, transformed in smoothly. And then it has a transformation, which is a rotation. And the rotation is basically the angle is dependent on the hours and the minutes properties that you saw a little bit further up. And whenever hours and minutes changes, this angle property will get automatically updated, and the thing will move in. And then in addition, you know, we have on the angle, we have a spring animation, which basically gives you this movement. So this is how QML works, and I just wanted to give you a short impression there. It's certainly not enough to learn it, but give you a short idea of that. So it's basically, it's an object tree with bindings where you can bind properties to values. You have signal slots that you know from the Qt C++ side, and you can also use JavaScript there. And, you know, you can expose any Q object into this in a very easy way. So let's go back. So the other big architectural change we did with Qt 5, Qt platform abstraction. We wanted to make it easier to bring Qt to new platforms. And we saw that the way we were doing that in Qt 4 had its limitations. And it was doing a platform port to a new platform was very hard. When we joined Nokia, we did the port to Symbian, and we found out how hard it is, how hard that one was. As a reaction to that, we created the Qt platform abstraction. And it's a replacement basically for the embedded backend, Qt embedded that we had for Linux, you know, on the frame buffer and the platforms ports. It makes it a lot easier to port to new platforms and less maintenance. It also had, you know, what it triggered with Qt 5 was that we had to rewrite all the backends that we had for X11, Windows, and Core graphics. But we were able to do that with much less manpower and effort than we used to when we did the initial port. And it makes ports to, for example, QNX, Android, iOS possible. Qt Embedded, the version that was working on a pure frame buffer, we replaced by using Qt with a Wayland backend, and then we have some libraries there, Qt Wayland and Qt Compositor, that you can use to build up a server, basically, so you can have multiple clients there. The other change we did is that the X11 backend now uses XCB directly and not Xlib anymore, which allows us to get better performance out of it and actually makes the code nicer. Then, you know, another thing that happens is we added lots of new features. We did that with every Qt release. This one's no exception. All of these, mainly on the C++ side in the lower layers, we added, you know, JSON support, so you can directly read and write and parse JSONs and have a nice API for that. Support for MIME types, lots of performance improvements. We have something like Qt Standard Pass. Actually, and some of these, like Qt Standard Pass, actually came from the KDE community, which brought them into Qt during the process of moving over to Qt 5. And that is where Open Governance, for example, which we'll talk about in a second, helped a lot. Some new regular expression class, Perl compatible, rewritten QRL, new signal slot connection mechanism at compile time, one of the things people have been asking for since a long time, and many, many other things. Another thing we've done is also that C++ 11 came out last year, and compilers are starting to support it more and more. And while Qt, we didn't want to, you know, now jump onto it and say, you know, you have to use a C++ 11 compliant compiler. Qt only requires a C++ 98 compliant one. But we wanted to start adding features from that. And if you happen to have one, a new GCC, for example, we're starting to use them for optimizations like using R value, references, move constructors, const expressions. And we added a few things like a class called a macro called QStringLiteral, which allows us to do, you know, convert char star or strings that you embed at compile time into the native representation of a QString. That's UTF-16 encoded at compile time. And you can do things like connect the signal to a lambda to execute code. So it's very nice, and we've done a lot of work there to really bring up and make use of these latest features of C++ 11. Qt WebKit, our WebKit integration for HTML rendering, we updated that to the latest version from WebKit.org. That gives us pretty much, you know, full, as much as anybody else, HTML5 compatibility. And it also gives us something that's called WebKit 2, which was a project done in the WebKit community to basically, you know, move the WebKit rendering out into a separate process, into a web process. So the user UI, your application runs in one process, it launches another process which does and delegates all the web page loading and rendering to it. The big advantage is that you can sandbox the web process. And it, you know, so you have a lot less problems with security in that respect, and you don't block the UI when loading pages. And if you trigger a bug in WebKit, crashes things, it doesn't crash your application. So it's a standard model that's now used by all major browsers. We also want to support that. We added a few new modules to the Essentials list, as I said before. Qt 3D, which allows you to easily integrate 3D content into your Qt app, so you can load 3D models, meshes, very easily. You have OpenGL helper classes for more advanced things like camera, materials, surfaces, and shapes. And you have an integration with Qt Quick, so you can easily use that from the QML side in a declarative way. Qt Location, it basically provides you GPS, positioning, mapping, simple navigation, and places search. That's something which is becoming, you know, more and more important in the future. I mean, position-based services is something that you see all over the places. Many, many applications are using them. So we have a module for that, and we thought it's really, really useful if that's available everywhere. And then last but not least, we have also added multimedia support. That was one of the big gaps we had for many years in Qt. We had nothing then, we were working with Phonon. There were some reasons why that didn't work quite as good as we wanted to. And so there was some work done to create Qt Multimedia, which gives you all the multimedia support you want. So these are the things that we've now done with Qt 5, basically. One thing to note when you migrate from Qt 4 to Qt 5, you know, we're binary incompatible, so you have to recompile your application. But we try to keep it source compatible with Qt 4 with very, very few exceptions. You know, so the Qt widgets are supported, and you know, these are some of the things that people are afraid of. But you don't have to migrate to Qt Quick, you don't have to use OpenGL, and you don't have to use JavaScript or anything like that. Your app will continue working as it is. And you saw that when I showed you the Qt Creator, that one was running against Qt 5, it's the same source code that we're actually also using against Qt 4. So we're building Qt Creator for Qt 4 and Qt 5 out of one code base with, I think, you know, a few, very few ifdefs. So recompilation is really enough for most cases. Timelines release. We've released the Qt 5 alpha on April 3rd, and you can download it and play around with it. But I would actually rather recommend, if you really want to play around with it, get something more recent. A lot of changes have gone in since then. We planned the beta. It's planned for June now, with binary packages also for the major platforms. And we hope to have the final ready by the end of the summer. So after Qt 5, we're trying to really move into an open source model where we also have time-based releases, probably two feature releases per year. And that's very much in sync also with what many Linux distributions do. They usually have two releases per year. So that hopefully gives a bit more predictability to everybody then. And possible focus areas are, you know, moving Qt, full desktop support for Qt Quick, an integrated software OpenGL renderer. Let's see if we can do that, because there's still, you know, GL problems on some of the platforms, on Linux for some cases, on some embedded chipsets that don't have GL, and on Windows. Want to continue to evolve WebKit 2 and, you know, make more process architectures for JavaScript. But all of this is very open because, you know, as I said, Qt project now is also an open source project, and it's being driven in the direction, you know, the people that contribute to it drive it into. A lot of it work still is certainly done also from Nokia's side. You know, we're not doing less than before, but anybody can influence that direction. And I think that brings us very nicely to the Qt community. Cornelius.
Yes. So we heard a lot about the technical improvements in Qt 5 and all the wonderful new features you get, but there's one really essential feature, which is the community. So with Qt 5, Qt goes to an open governance model. So it's opening up the development. It's becoming a true free software project. So it's not Nokia alone which is controlling the development. Not everybody is working for Nokia who is contributing to Qt, but it's getting more open. and it's Nook had delegated the control of the project to a community. So the Qt project is hosted on an independent website now. All the tools are open there. Everybody has transparent access to the code and can see what's going on there and can contribute. So this is a way how to open up the project in a fair way so everybody can contribute. And it's based not on the affiliation anymore, but on merit. So the people who do the good things, who write code, who write good patches, they get the code accepted, and it doesn't matter anymore where the code is coming from. So the rules are the same for everybody, for Nokia, as well as for other companies and other individuals. And to explain this a little bit more, this is the governance model of Qt. So we have this pyramid of maintainers and contributors. So what's not displayed here is all the users who are using Qt. And when you start to do more than just using Qt and you start to contribute, you write code or you write documentation or you help with bugs in some way, then you get to be a contributor. That's a pretty low-level step, and it also doesn't come with a lot of obligations or anything, but that allows you to actually contribute. So, and for the code contribution especially, there's more levels how the community works there. So if you contribute a patch, you submit it to the tools in Qt, and then you have a level of approvers, that's contributors who have proven to be good contributors, who have some overview about the software, have a certain standard of quality and so on, and they can get appointed as approvers by the other approvers, and then they are able to review patches and approve them. And you need to get enough approval from given approvers so that the patch gets into the mainline development. And one level above, for coordination and providing direction to whole modules, we have the maintainer level. These are the people who are responsible for individual Qt modules. So they are acting as the people who provide direction and get some overview for the whole module, so a component of Qt. And in case there are some conflicts which can't be resolved on the approver level, the maintainer can then say, okay, here, trying to resolve the problem, and in the end also taking decisions. And also the maintainers, they can appoint other maintainers, so you can move up in the stack from an approver to a maintainer if you have enough time and interest and passion to actually maintain a module of Qt. And that's open to everybody, not only to Nokia, but everybody can become a maintainer. And on top of that, the chief maintainer, Lars, that's the last instance in case there is something which can't be resolved, and to provide some overall direction and vision for the project as a whole. So this structure allows many people to get into the project and to contribute. And the process, how this works, the contribution process it looks a little bit difficult, but actually it's a relatively straightforward process. So there's a one-time setup thing you have to do. You have to set up yourself as a contributor. And that's on one hand, you have to sign the collaboration agreement. I will come to that in a minute. And you have to set up your personal infrastructure. So you have to create accounts, have to set up your technical infrastructure, like checking out Qt and setting up your local repository so that you can contribute. And this is all based on Git. So Qt is handled in Git. And there's a tool called Garrett, which is the review tool, which offers the workflow for patches to get into Qt, to get reviewed, and to get approved. So what happens if you want to change something in Qt or contribute a new feature or something? You clone your Qt, you write your patch, write your software. When you think you're ready, you commit it to a specific location into the Git repository, and Garrett takes over. You add reviewers, so you ask other people, other contributors, other approvers to look at your patch to tell you if it's good or not. There are also some automatic checks running. This is this early warning system which does some automatic checks on the format of the code, and if there are some obvious mistakes, so in case you committed with with an incomplete merge or something, the early warning system will detect that and immediately reject the or give some notice in the system so that you know, okay, I have to improve it. And then you get comments from all the other reviewers, and they will tell you, okay, you have to do that in a different way, or this is good, or that is bad. And you get this peer review, which makes sure that the quality of the code is on the level which we want to have in Qt. And so there's a pretty high level of quality which is expected. So you might go through a couple of cycles to improve the patch until it's ready. And when it's ready and everybody has approved it, it gets into a staging area. Then the continuous integration starts to run, so all the unit tests are run on all kind of platforms. And this makes sure that there are no regressions, that the code fulfills all expectations of the code base. And when this succeeded successfully, then the patch gets into the mainline development branch. And then, of course, in the next release. So this is the contribution process from a technical point of view. I mentioned the contribution agreement. So that's one thing. Sometimes it's a bit controversial. Some people like contribution agreements, not at all. Some accept them. Some companies think they are pretty essential. So the contribution agreement you need for Qt, it's a pretty relaxed contribution agreement. So it's no copyright assignment. You don't give up your rights. It's a non-exclusive license agreement. So you allow Nokia to actually use the code, use your contribution for Qt. And this is needed mainly for two reasons. One is that the Nokia needs to fulfill the obligations under the KDE Free Qt Foundation. I will talk about that a little bit later. So that's which guarantees the availability of Qt for free software development. And for that, you need to have the license. And there's a commercial version of Qt, which is preferred by some commercial customers. And for that, you also need this special license. And Nokia is able to grant this license with the contribution agreement. So in KDE, we have a couple of people taking care of that, some representatives. And they were in contact with Nokia while this was discussed, while the open governance process was set up. And we discussed with the Nokia lawyers the implications of this agreement and had some concerns which were addressed. We also got a lawyer involved which checked the agreement. And in the end, we came to a version where we could say, okay, we as a community can recommend our members to actually sign this agreement. So we as KDE organization, we recommend our members to actually use this contribution agreement so you're able to contribute to Qt. And I mentioned the KDE Free Qt Foundation. That's actually something which is pretty old, which is coming from 1998. And it was founded at that time when people were concerned that maybe if Troitech at that time would stop development of Qt, KDE would be in trouble, and all other users of Qt, of course. Because then there wouldn't be any new versions because the software was not available freely. So we made this agreement in 1998. And this guarantees the availability. There's a contract which says if Nokia stops, or the owner of Qt, Trolltech, then Nokia, stops to release Qt, then the foundation will be able to release Qt under a BSD license. So people can use it. And it's also possible to build up the same business model Trolltech used or Nokia used for a while to maintain Qt in the future. So this is something which kind of shows that for the whole time, there was this commitment of Qt to the community, and it's still there. It's still used by the users of Qt. In this case, KDE, but of course, it's also usable for everybody else. And to show how the contributions for Qt under the open governance model developed, this is a graph showing the number of commits since the introduction of Qt open governance. And it's grouped by employers of the people who commit. So the big blue thing, that's Nokia. So that's all the Nokia contributions. You see one dip there, that's Christmas. I think there's another small dip, which is Easter. And what you see is that basically the Nokia contributions are more or less constant, maybe even a bit growing. So Nokia is still investing. But on top of that, there are new contributors who weren't able to contribute before. So the green ones, the green area, that's individuals. That's, for example, KDE developers. The red ones, that's KDub, which is a big Qt contributor. There's some Intel part and some other companies. And what you see nicely there is that actually the contributions are growing. Nokia is participating, but a lot of other companies and individuals are also able to contribute now. So these are the statistics for Qt Base. That's one module of Qt. The statistics for other modules, they look a little bit different. But you can see that the community here actually is That's a sign of a healthy community, this graph. So, and now we come to the platform part. It's Lars again.
Yeah, thank you. So, just talking a little bit about, you know, I said already, you know, Qt is there on many, many different things. And I just wanted to give a few short examples of where Qt is being used. So, it's actually really being used in all sorts of different contexts. So, here you see the KDE desktop. You know, many of you are probably using it. I'm using it still for my daily work. And that has been evolving over many, many years. You see, for example, one other example is Google Earth. Here you see on the Mac, that's using Qt. The Nokia N9 phone. It's fully built on top of Qt. Everything there you see is on top, built on top of Qt 4.7. Raspberry Pi, that's a good example of something really small and embedded. It's a very low-end, actually, hardware. And you can see it up and running at the Qt booth in the exhibition area. It's a small $35 device with full HD output. It's pretty amazing what kind of hardware you get now for that price. And Qt's running really, really nicely on that one. We have done a lot of work to bring Qt 5 over to that device and show what we can really do with Qt 5. And as I said, there's many other devices like, you know, I've seen a coffee machine. We had that at the developer days last autumn, which was really Qt-based. And it had the whole user interface done with Qt, apparently. You couldn't see any, you couldn't really see it that it was Qt, but that's what it was inside. And other things. Another project that's really been ongoing now since 1.5 years approximately is the Necessitas project, which brings Qt to Android. And this work started because of that Qt platform abstraction work that we did. So it's a QPA backend for Android. And they added a Qt creator-based SDK around it and an app installer for the Google Marketplace, which is called Ministro. It's a KDE project, actually, and hosted by KDE since 2011. And, you know, there's actually quite a few applications now in the Android Marketplace that are based on top of this. Well, it's a very, very nice project and very cool to see. There's ports to other platforms that are ongoing. There's a lot of work now invested by QNX and Vim to bring Qt to QNX. And they also said that this will be a very important part for the next BlackBerry platform. So that's a cool thing. I'm really happy to see that happening. We have a direct FB backend for low-level embedded devices that's been contributed right after the Qt project launch. Obviously, we support other Unix systems with X11, or quite a few at least. And then there's also an iOS port for Qt 4.8 based on the Qt platform abstraction that's available. So you see that there's a lot of things, and we have actually managed now to, you know, bring Qt from, you know, 2005, where it was mainly, you know, desktop, all the desktop platforms, to also be, you know, something that's also spanning across many of the embedded and mobile operating systems. So, Cornelius.
Yeah, so one of the important platforms for Qt, of course, is KDE. And KDE is, I think, still the largest open source project based on Qt out there. And there are a lot of relations. So I will show a little bit how KDE will work together with Qt 5 and integrate with that. So the first thing I want to say is that there will be no KDE 5. So that doesn't mean that we will stop releasing software. So of course we will continue to work on writing KDE software. But what it means is that we're not putting everything together into one big piece and release that as one huge change which breaks everything. So we are not doing that. What we will do is doing that in smaller steps, in smaller modules, and we will decouple the different dependencies. And how we will do that, I will show just now. So one key goal for the next release of the KDE frameworks, which are based on Qt 5, is to make it more modular. With the open governance model, we have the chance to actually get into Qt 5. So we can, instead of writing our own code, which is then sitting on top of Qt and has to be maintained independently, we can actually get this code into Qt itself. So we can work on the Qt platform itself. And we are using that to move some of the things which we have duplicated over time into Qt. And this gives us more freedom to actually use Qt as a base and put our own more specialized modules on top of that. And that's what we are doing. We are writing more modular. We are separating the libraries into smaller modules, which are basically just Qt add-ons. This will take a while, so KDE Frameworks 5, that's targeted for next year, something like that. And on top of that, we will have the usual workspace and applications, and we will continue to release them. We will also continue to release them now based on the old libraries. And then when Qt 5 is out and KDE Frameworks is out, we can gradually move applications to this new, more modular framework. And the community is basically holding this together, so the KDE is not standing for the big piece of integrated software, but it's really standing for the community. And the goal of all this is to lower the barrier between KDE and Qt, to make it more easy for people to just pick the pieces they need so that there's no fundamental difference between Qt-only applications and KDE applications, but that in the end, all applications are on the same level. You can mix them, you can run them, you can use whatever you want on whatever desktop or whatever other form factor you need. So this is the goal of the work for KDE Frameworks 5, to really become more modular, to become more flexible, to address these diversity of use cases, of form factors, of devices, which is out there in a more easy way. This actually is an excerpt of our wiki page where we are planning the Qt 5 mergers. So this is code which already is in Qt 5, which will go into Qt 5. There are more pages for the future versions. So this is a work in progress which is going on, and it covers all these basic infrastructure deals like the standard paths which were already mentioned, or MIME types, and we are also talking about datetime, about locale, about internationalization, this kind of stuff. And the result, how we envision the Frameworks 5, so this might look a little bit scary, but the message here is that what we will do is we will put KDE into smaller modules, which are carefully maintained in terms of dependencies. So we will have Qt add-ons, which only depend on Qt. That's the lower tier. We will have another set of modules, which then use these of the tier below. And we will have modules which depend on all of the modules. So you can actually pick what you need, and you don't get any additional dependencies. And one project we started, which we are also targeting at Qt 5, is to get an overview, so basically a CPAN version for Qt. So we want to collect libraries all on the same level and provide information and access to users so they can pick what they need, independent if it's part of Qt itself, if it's part of KDE, or maybe coming from some other authors. But provide really a flexible and independent access to everything which is there. And users can really choose what they need and don't get tons of additional dependencies. And just because some people sometimes think that, the desktop, of course, won't go away anytime soon. We talked a lot about tablets, about phones, about coffee machines, whatever. So that's all interesting platforms. But of course, we have tens of millions of KDE users on the desktop. So we are committed to that, and we will develop this also in the future. We will also address other devices, but the desktop is there. And there are always, I mean, there are still hundreds of millions of devices running desktop software out there and being sold. So we will do that. And just to show a few examples, which are definitely desktop applications right now, like Krita, where you can draw beautiful pictures. That's a desktop application which makes pretty heavy use of all kind of desktop features. So these are the applications which certainly won't go away anytime soon. Or another example, video editing, KDE and Live is also part of the KDE project. They just had a release. Video editing, that's something where a desktop is pretty handy, so that's harder on the phone. or DigiCam as photo management application, which also is a pretty powerful application. You can do a lot of good things there, but that's a desktop application, and it will continue to be maintained. Maybe there will be some variant which also addresses tablet user interfaces, but this is something which is going to stay. And just to mention that once again, KDE, the world has changed. We have described this challenge at the beginning, that when KDE started, when Qt started, the world was a bit more easy. So you had desktops and you could write software for that, but you didn't have this variety of different devices and form factors and so on. And so the original idea of KDE to put everything together is not that valid anymore. So it has evolved into something where we put that not into one big thing, but next to each other. And the community is holding it together. And that's KDE, the community. It's not version, so it's not KDE 5, but it's KDE, and this is there. So for the future, we talked about technology, about community, which enables us to do a lot of things. So what will happen in the future? One example where we started to address this variety is contact. So contact, many people know it. It's mail, contacts, calendaring, and it's a typical desktop application. It has been there for quite a while, and that's the desktop interface. So what we did, we wrote another an alternative UI for that. That's Contact Touch. So this is written in QML. It's already a little bit, it was done, I think, already, or started already 2 years ago. And this brings the functionality of the desktop application to a tablet or even a phone interface, which touch display, so the UI looks different, but we have the same features. Like, for example, at the bottom right, you can see an email which is signed with an SMIME certificate. So that's a desktop feature which you usually don't get from a mobile mailer. And that's pretty powerful, this approach. So what we can do there is we have desktop and touch interfaces, and we separate the logic from that, and we make this really just a UI level which can be adapted to the needs of the users, of the hardware, of how the input methods, how it's used. And the backend is a modular thing. In this case, it's Akunadi, which is the PIM infrastructure. And this will, for example, be a modular part called a KDE solution as part of the KDE Frameworks 5. So if you want to have to access to this data, you can use that. If you don't need it, you don't get it. Another example is Plasma Active. So this is KDE's workspace for tablets. So there we go away from the desktop and provide something which is tailored to tablets. And this UI also is heavily based on QML, because that's really the technology which allows to address these use cases and address these form factors. But a lot of this is based on the components of the desktop. So it's not a complete rewrite of everything, but it's using the pieces which are there on the desktop, but providing UI where actually the UI makes a difference. So this is a screenshot. That's much more impressive if you actually try it on a tablet, because it's pretty dynamic. But you can see there are some elements which are just taken from the desktop, like the notes widget there. There are some concepts like the activities you see on the right, this activity switcher, which is also present on the desktop, but there it looks different. You have a little bit different use case. But there you can collect programs, desktop components in the same way, but on a interface which is targeted for a tablet user. You can use your finger to switch through that pretty easily, and that's nice. But on a desktop, it's a bit less handy, so there you have different controls. So this is software. And one of the things which is coming very soon now is the Vivaldi tablet. So that's actually hardware which comes preloaded with KDE, with the Plasma Active version. So this is a tablet which is a lot is developed by the community, so it's really a project rooted very deeply in the community. It comes with a free software stack, it runs Linux, and you get the source code. It runs KDE, Plasma Active, so you have access to all the source code. You can change it, you can improve it, you can see what it's doing. And this Vivaldi tablet, that's in some sense, it's certainly a bit experimental. I mean, nobody has done this before like that, really selling a KDE tablet. So there's a lot of interesting things going on. And if I'm right, then it probably is available for sale in the next couple of weeks. So the last example for where all this can be going with the frameworks and the community which allows us to do exciting stuff. Tomahawk, that's a music player which that's a Qt application, so it's not using any KDE libraries. It's a pretty fresh community, some people coming from KDE, some people coming from somewhere else. And what they do is they provide social media listening. So what they do is they have a pretty nice UI, and what they allow is that people share different playlists, they share the music they listen to, and then the music player collects the music from the sources which are available. You might have it locally, maybe it's something running on an online service you have access to, and this can then combine it, and you have a new way of how to deal with your music, how to listen to your music. So that's on targeted a tablet, so it's a different form of diversity which is addressed here. But it's a pretty innovative approach, and I can only recommend to check it out. One thing where we still have some work to do, that's Qt Quick for the desktop. So with the tablets, phones, that works already pretty well. But for the desktops, there are still some pieces missing to actually address the specific desktop. The specific desktop elements you need in applications, which you usually don't have in a touch interface. So this is still work in progress. There are some desktop components being worked on. And for example, something like, it's probably not the most popular operating system in this audience, but for the Windows 8 Metro UI, that's not really possible to do anymore. Implementing with QWidgets, for that you need Qt Quick.
Maybe I can add one or two sentences to that.
Sure.
I think, you know, what we're seeing now is also that, you know, we have now two worlds in a way. We have the QWidgets, which are, you know, coming from, you know, came with Qt for all these years, and we have the Qt Quick for doing, you know, more fluid user interfaces. And what you see is also that the world is changing. Windows 8 and the Metro UI, there's a good example. It actually requires a touch screen to manipulate things for the most part, or at least it's very much optimized for that. And it has all these fluid animations. This is something we can't do with QWidgets anymore. It's just not doable from a technical level. And we have a new technology for that. So I expect that also on the desktop, you will start seeing this more and more, you know, laptops with touch screens, things where people want these kind of animations and fluid user interfaces. So it's important that we also bring this to the desktop for this reason and to have something that is, you know, where you can use one development model for all the platforms, for all the different form factors. And with the different changes, I mean, you know, in the old times you had just had desktops, you could have 100% the same source code and run it on all the different operating systems. With the different form factors now, you might have a very small screen on a phone and a pretty large screen on your desktop. You do have to do some changes to the user interface. But I think it's important that we still, you know, maintain that compatibility so that at least the way you do that is the same. And you feel at home, and you don't have to use different models for the different types of applications. And that's something that I think is going to be very important now moving forward.
Yeah. Good, and we talked a lot about community, and I want to stress this again. So with the Qt Open Governance, Qt has put its community really on a new level. It's an actual true open source community. It's much easier to work for KDE, for example, but also other communities with that. So the 15 years of KDE community experience can more easily be combined with the Qt experience. And we do stuff like sprints, contributor summit, dev days conference, and so on. So really it's changing the character of how Qt is developed a lot. And this is a big strength. One example for that is what we do in the KDE community a lot is mentoring, so getting new people introduced, mentoring students. So for example, this year in the Google Summer of Code programs, we are mentoring 60 students, and I expect it to happen much more of that also together with the Qt community, in the Qt community, and taking the advantage of being open and being the home for a lot of diverse people and use that to, in the end, create better and stronger software. So conclusion, we mentioned the challenge that the world is becoming more diverse. So there are many more different things you have to consider. And what we want to do and what we think we can do with Qt 5 is we can embrace this variety. We can embrace it through technology by providing flexible technology like Qt Quick to address different machines, different use cases. And we embrace this variety through community by providing an open community which allows people which have different backgrounds, which do different things to work together in one common home. So this, I think, is a pretty powerful way how to address this challenge we stated at the beginning. And we hope that in the future we can do a lot of good things there. And you can become part of that, of course, become part of the future, become part of Qt. Go to qt-project.org, that's the main homepage for Qt. There you find everything, especially if you have patches, that's always welcome. There's the code review, qtproject.org, discussions, there are mailing lists where you can discuss Qt development. And if you want to try it, the latest beta, the latest releases, there are a couple of URLs there where you can download the stuff.
The beta is pre-beta, that's snapshots just.
So the pre-beta. Good. So that's what we wanted to tell you. Thank you for your attention. And
are there any questions? Are there any questions in the audience? I pass the microphone. Nothing so far, okay.
No questions. Think again.
We answered everything, apparently.
So what's actually the next, when do you do some coding meetings in the KDE community in the next time somewhere?
There's actually two meetings coming up which are pretty important. One of them is the Qt Contributor Summit. That's in 4 weeks here in Berlin, where you know a lot of the contributors for Qt are meeting. And then 1 week later, there's Academy in
Tallinn. So that's the next two meetings. And KDE people will be at the Contributor Summit. Qt people will be at Academy. So there will be lots of fun to be had.
I have another question concerning your, I think you were at a Nokia raffle or an app contest of a number of Nokia phones. Can you say something about?
Well, we had an app contest now, and I think we're going to give away some Nokia phones to the winners at, I think it was 2 p.m., right?
Yeah. I think so. I just wondered if you had some first feedback of the submitting.
I saw some of the apps. Some of them looked really nice. So
I think Danimo can say about something about that.
Oh, okay. Sit on.
Okay. So it's actually two contests. One of them is we had an announcement a few weeks ago announcing that we would like to see applications for DE9. And there's been quite tremendous feedback. So we're actually contemplating to push back announcing the winners for that later. What we'll definitely do at 2 p.m., and that's why it should be in our booth at that exact time, is we're giving away 2i9 to the audience. All you need to do is to sign up and be there at 2 p.m. at our booth, and we'll announce the winners of the app contest also, but not at 2 p.m. because we're still reviewing all the incoming stuff. We had a deadline yesterday, and we just figured that was way too optimistic. We were rather overwhelmed over the feedback for that. So that's a good thing.
Okay, thank you. So there's still a question.
I don't know the Qt environment very well, but I'd like to hear some words on other language bindings, as I'm more the Python guy.
Yes.
And there are, as you know, there are two Python projects, PyQt and PySide.
Yes, I can mention that shortly. So with Python, we have, as you said, two two different bindings. One of them is PyQt, that has been around for a while, and PySide. PySide is being developed now as part of the Qt project on the Qt project website. It's open there. You know, we're looking for contributors, and it would be great to see that move forward. I mean, they're providing pretty good bindings now, both of them for Qt 4. I'm not quite sure what the status for Qt 5 is right now. I would need to look that up.
Okay.
But we're seeing, at least, I think there was quite an interest in PySide on the Qt project to move that forward.
All right. Any more questions? If not, so thanks again, guys. A big applause to you and to your keynote.
Thank you.
The program continues at 2 p.m. 2 p.m. In this lecture room and the others as well. I think you guys will be around for the remainder of the day.
We will be around.
The Qt booth I'm around for at least another 2 hours approximately before I have to try to catch a plane.
Okay, great, and thank you again.